Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed, and welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is Tuesday, April 24th, 2012, and this is a somewhat, an exceptional day because
auspicious.
Yeah. That, see, the voice is already there because she's here.
I'm here.
This is indeed the Boomer and the Babe Show today because Deborah's with us, and we don't have an opportunity to do a show with her as often as we have been in the past, and we're glad to have her. And I'm Pete Peters.
And I'm Deborah Brown, and glad to be here.
Yes, indeed. We're glad to have you, and we are indeed coming to you from our studios in Youngtown, Arizona, the Valley View Community Food Bank complex, also Feeding Arizona, where the food is always free. If ever you're looking for a really great nonprofit 501c3 to make a donation to help out mankind, valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com is the place to go. Contact Jesse Ramirez, owner and chief executive officer of Valley View Community Food Bank, and he will be able to help you out in getting everything that you might need to make that donation, whether it be money, food, or time as a volunteer. Also, I want to remind everybody that Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is more than just this radio show. We do ebooks, mini books. Many of our ebook authors have their own show right here on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to them as well. Always good information there. And beyond that, we do promotional products if you're in a need. And we've been known to do a video or two for your website. And our latest addition to our family of products is Boomer Experience Speaks Online Magazine. So please go to boomerthebabe.com, sign up for the magazine, and it will come free to your inbox every month. Boomer and Boomer Experience Speaks at boomerandthebabe.com. Great guest today. She's Dr. Linda Clever. She's a member of the prestigious Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences and a clinical professor of medicine at UCSF. In 1998, Dr. Clever founded Renew, a nonprofit organization that aims to help busy, devoted people regain or maintain their effectiveness and creativity. Her book, The Fatigue Prescription, is filled with easy self-assessments, informational charts, and sound advice from a physician who healed herself. This book will help you avoid illness, reset priorities, and most importantly, regain your health and happiness. Welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show, Dr. Linda Clever.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here.
Oh, believe me, it's our pleasure to have you here with us. We always get things started with Deborah when she's here, and I'm going to take advantage of the fact that she's here. So, Deborah, take it away.
I appreciate that. And actually, the first thing I like to ask our wonderful guests to do is give a two-minute movie. And what I mean by that is your life, as far back as you'd like to go, and tell us everything for 2 minutes.
That's terrific. Well, I do remember the very first time I laughed, and I think I was maybe 2 years old, and my father kicked at a garter snake, and his shoe came off, and I just thought that was really funny. So that's the earliest memory. And then fast forward, we moved across country from Seattle to Kentucky to Indiana to Buffalo, New York. Then I went to college in California, Stanford, undergraduate medical school, and while there met my husband, who had just started medical school when we started to date. And I then, instead of having a senior year in college, we got married and I started medical school. So we've been married for a wonderfully long and glorious time, and let's say just almost 52 years. Our daughter is also an internist. She's on the faculty at Johns Hopkins and has medical school and has twins with her husband. And the twins are 2 years old, and they are very, 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 very cute. And a boy and a girl, Mila and Graham. My training is in internal medicine, infectious diseases, community medicine, occupational health. Been very involved in the AIDS situation at the very start when it was unbearably tragic, actually, and then have spent much of my life trying to keep people healthy even though they work, whether they work for pay or work at home. Work can be draining, and you can get exhausted doing good. Then all the wheels came off my life in a series of tragic ways, and with friends and colleagues, John Gardner in particular, who started Common Cause and was secretary of HEW and had written a lot about renewing and excellence and leadership, said, well, this is a perfect time to put theory into practice. We know that people need to renew. We know that automobiles need gas. We know that our souls need refreshing. We know that our windows need washing. We know that we need to take care of ourselves, except we rarely do it unless there's some kind of a crisis. So the question is, how can we keep creative and enthusiastic and effective at work and at home, both? And that's what Renew is all about. It's a not-for-profit, and that's what I do with a great deal of my time, except I'm also Associate Dean for Alumni Affairs at the Stanford Medical School. How am I doing on my time?
I think that's about 2 minutes, and I am exhausted.
No, well, I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky. And, it isn't all at the same time. That's, you notice, and I think that's a wonderful question you asked because it shows the sequence. You don't do it all at once.
Oh, I know. And what it leads me to, one of the things that I notice is that you got married and then got into medical school and then had children or a child. So that seems like a lot going on.
Deborah, again, you don't do it all at once. I was admitted to medical school before we got married. So I was a junior in college, was admitted to medical school. Then we got married in August, and my medical training started in September. Then we didn't have Sarah for 10 years.
Ah, okay.
You see.
Yes.
However, I had a classmate who, when she started medical school, had 3 children.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was in times gone by when my class had 65 people in it and there were 5 women. So I guess one message is for us to think about now our own lives, regardless of our age, and as we're thinking about our children and grandchildren, is don't get stopped by the numbers or don't get stopped by what kind of, quote, everyone is doing, end quote, because there's always room for an exception. There always is a place that will take unusual candidates for whether it's engineering school or law school or seminary because you have always wanted to be a minister, whatever it is. I think it's really important not to get stuck on what everybody does. You need to follow your own heart and your own soul and don't get discouraged by statistics.
This may be a little bit off the subject, but this is the kind of the way we roll here, I guess, sometimes. What is the status of women in the medical field today? Is it still a drastic minority of women that are in the business, or is that number increasing substantially?
A complicated question. First of all, most medical schools are about 50-50 men and women, and it's not uncommon to have it 51-52% women. So those are the statistics for certainly the last 5, maybe 10 years going forward. In terms of the status of women in medicine as far as their patients, they're wildly successful. There are a whole lot of patients appreciate, and I don't want to paint anything all one way or the other, but some women listen more than some men do to patients because that's sometimes the way women are in terms of appreciating stories. So some patients perceive that difference. If you look in terms of impact and power, however, which is another way of slicing the pie, there are very few women who are deans of medical schools. Very few women, yeah, there are more women, but not a whole lot who are department chairs. And I think that that's something that people are acutely aware of and concerned about, because it is not a what's called a pipeline issue anymore, because there have been plenty of women in the profession for a long enough time to have risen to levels of full professor and dean and so forth. And it's the same in law, and it's the same in computer engineering, and it's the same, and as we know, I think it's just within the last week, that women as a whole at the same job earn 77% of what a man would earn at the same job. So the story is the numbers of people of women in medicine is now almost at a parity, again, going forward. However, in terms of influence, it still lags, and that's puzzling and concerning.
I asked the question because you did kind of skirt around the issue a little bit, number one. Number two, we just recently, within the last 2 weeks, had Gloria Felt on our show, former head of Planned Parenthood, MSNBC commentator, and so on and so forth. Just a great hour we spent with her talking about these various issues. Now, I'm obviously concerned with it for a couple of reasons. Deborah is one, my mother's another, my daughter's another, my two granddaughters are two more, and I even the female dog. but I am surrounded by women, and I have to be that way because I have to make sure to do whatever I can do to ensure or assure that these ladies have the best going forward. And I'm all interested in this female rights and so on and so forth stuff. So I just want to make that little comment as to where it is. And Deborah said, gosh, he said it just the way I wanted him to. That's good.
Well, I thank you for that. And it's been very clear in my professional life, and I would think that many other women, as well as men, agree, is that it has been men who have been a tremendous help to me, and that's because there just haven't been women there to help, because, again, I'm old enough where there just weren't. And so I was just listening to a radio interview of Terry Gross on National Public Radio on Fresh Air, interviewing Anna Quinlan, and Anna Quinlan was saying that one of her hardest tasks was to raise feminist boys, because it is very clear in almost any society across the world, regardless of culture, that men have distinct advantages. I don't feel bitter about it or anything. It's just kind of the way it is, except it's not the way it should be. And I think that in a time when we need as much talent as we can bring to bear on any situation, whether it's the environment or war or food, or, and you mentioned the food bank, which are so important, particularly these days. I was talking to the head of a food bank the other day who said, you know, the good news and the bad news is that business is booming.
Right.
It's because people need food banks. Well, we need as much talent from any source that we can get, and that means to me that's young people and older people and men and women and people who aren't sure what they are. You know, it's just everybody into the pool if we're going to make it.
Absolutely.
You know, you were talking a minute ago about the stories that you have heard over time and that women listen maybe better, in quotes, I'll say better, but certainly differently than male doctors probably do. But I know that you've heard lots of stories, and you probably hear people talking about things that are indicators that they're just not completely happy or fulfilled or, you know, bouncy. You know, there's no maybe joy or bounce in their step or whatever. Do you have ways that you can talk to people about what I would call bouncing back maybe from things that are just not working?
Well, it's interesting. It is very easy to get in a rut. And one of the things we do with Renew is we have what we call conversation groups where people get together maybe once a month or every other month and talk about things that are important to them, such as how do you define success? That's a very interesting question, actually. What is success? as you think about it? Or how do you get through a tough day? Or how do you take care of your kids and your parents at the same time? There are many, many things that are on our minds that it's a help to talk about. And one of the things that people do want to talk about is bouncing back, is resilience. And in one of the conversation groups we had a fun conversation about the difference between being in a rut and being in a groove. And, you know, when you're in a groove, you're kind of bouncing along, your fingers are snapping, you've got a smile on your face, you're, you know, skipping. When you're in a rut, it's kind of like you're below the level of the ground, everything's kind of gray and boring and worrisome, and you just kind of scuff your toes along. The thing is, a groove can become a rut if you don't think about it. And one of the things that, as we hear people who say, you know, I'm just not as creative as I used to be, or nobody's inviting me out anymore, well, it may be because you're kind of grumpy, or maybe because it's kind of boring. Now, you may be depressed, which is a clinical illness that needs medical attention. And let me just say that one common definition of depression is when people feel hopeless, helpless, and worthless. And if a person feels that way for a week or two or longer, they need medical care, because that's not something that is not trivial. It's very important, and it's treatable. And so sometimes people lose their balance because they are medically ill with any number of things, including depression. But sometimes people just kind of lose their verve because the groove turns into a rut. And one of the things that we always talk about first is to go through and to think about what your values are. And that's because when you know your values, it means that you can live your values, and that is what gives you meaning and joy. And the quest actually isn't for happiness. Happiness is a side effect of having meaning in your life. And when you know what's important to you, you know how you want people to think about you perhaps after you've gone, or they miss you for a certain reason. And when you think about your values, whether it's kindness or excellence and or family and or sense of humor, so forth and so on, then you can arrange your life and start getting back your bounce, because you've decided how to spend your time. Because all you have is time. And if you spend your time on your values and things that are important to you, then it's bound to help you flourish and help you bounce back. So knowing your values is absolutely square one. Then, you know, we can talk about some other things, too, that are important. One of the things that I would just say, again, another side comment in a way, is to get back your bounce, is to look back and see what's worked before. When things haven't gone well, or when you've been upset, or you've been in a grumpy or discouraged or whatever, there are people who help you out of it. There are situations that help you out of it. There may be a book that you find that is funny no matter when it is you reread that book. So to think of what's worked before and kind of do that again is always
right.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that you hooked right onto ruts and grooves, because I had already put a little sticky at page 68, which is ruts and grooves.
Uh-huh.
And I like that you say that the ruts are comfortable, yet pinching, diminishing place, an attitude downer, and that grooves are where the joy travels within you. And those are very powerful words, and I like that. I like that picture that you paint. You know that. That's nice. I understand that. But I also like that you mentioned the depression, because when I was reading that about ruts and grooves, I was actually thinking about manic depressive when I actually wrote that next to my notes as a something else that you would not want to be, you know, in such highs and such lows, which would be very very much something to have a doctor talk to you
That's
about.
Exactly right. I think that... that again, a wonderful point. In manic depression, again, not to get too clinical about it, but you're just exactly your description. The highs are way too high and become destructive as people lose their judgment, lose their sleep. Sometimes, you know, their pulse goes way too high. They eat too much. They don't eat enough. Everything is really out of control. And depression is the other end of the scale where things are also out of control in terms of sadness. And also in a depressed situation, your body doesn't work either. People can get constipated, their pulse can get slow, their skin can get dry. There are many different, very interesting, I mean, the body and the soul, brain, emotions, all this, it's not surprising. We're all contained in, you know, inside the same skin, so they must affect each other, and they do. So yes, the rut and the groove are, you know, kind of within normal limits. Manic depression is medical care for either or both. And as you know, sometimes one person has the same thing kind of alternately.
Yesterday, Linda, I had a guest on the show. She is a life coach, a certified life coach. And we were talking a great deal because we've had this conversation on our show before with regard to the baby boomer generation and their reinvention and finding a different path and being forced to do so, and the consternation that it causes and the turmoil and whatever else, and how you can get yourself out of that condition. And she was saying, from a life coach standpoint, many of the same things that you were just talking about. She's not a clinical person with regard to like a psychiatrist or something like that, although her husband apparently is a psychiatrist. She's a master's in social work. But it's interesting that seems to be a malady. I'm sure other people have it as well. But it seems to be a malady right now, and the malady du jour of the baby boomer. Would you go along with that assumption?
Is specify what you think the malady is.
Well, the fact that there's confusion, there might be some depression, there might be this highs and lows, there might be this unknowing of what the next step in the process is. Is that all there is? Is this all there is? Kind of a situation.
Well, I think that there again, from the clinical standpoint, the literally the manic depression, that sort of thing, that's pretty much spread over all the lifespan. There's nothing boomerish about that. That's it can happen at any age. I think that what I see about people of a certain age, and there certainly are different stages, you know, that people go through. What's happening these days, it's very interesting, is that, again, from my perspective as a physician and somebody who has been working with people for, you know, 15 years or so, and again, in terms of how do you remain effective and enthusiastic and find meaning and joy, so and stay healthy, obviously, because, you know, your body's part of it, and we can talk about that later, too, if you want, is that many boomers, and this is not 100% of anything, however, many boomers really focused on career, that
yes.
Our career was ourself. That's you are what your work is. Whereas people, you know, Gen X people, you know, are more likely to say, I'm going to have a life. I am going to raise my own children, and I am going to be able to do some traveling. I may not be at the same company for 3 years, much less 33 years. I may not live in the same place for 3 years, much less 30 years, whatever it is. The thing, and the reason, one of the reasons I talked about values in the first place, it turns out that some of those differences, which we feel, both we's, I mean the younger people and the older people, feel as if we grate on each other sometimes, and can be very quick to judge the other. The boomers say that the Gen Xers are lazy or irresponsible. The Gen Xers say that the boomers are stuck in their own ways, and you know they didn't treat their children right because they never saw them because they were working so hard. Well, you know, everybody can plead guilty to whatever. However, it turns out that when you scratch kind of one cell layer deep, there are very many shared values. And that's why in a family or in a workplace, people really have to talk about values, not what we're supposed to do with our work, not just customer satisfaction, nothing wrong with that. However, it's what makes me tick, what makes you tick, what do you believe in, and how do you want to live? And it turns out that you ask almost anybody, and somewhere on their list of values is family or friends, or could be faith, it could be kindness, it could be there are lots of things that people share in common. So then our task is to see how does that translate. And one of the things that I've found, for example, in a workplace, is that it turns out that people in, let's say, their 50s and 60s and 70s, a lot of people in those ages still work full-time or part-time, they want to be with their kids and grandkids. And it turns out that people who are 25 and 30 and 35 and 40, they want to be with their kids and maybe with their parents or with friends. Well, then, how can a work schedule be arranged so that that can happen? Turns out everybody wants to be with their kids. So what's the difference? Just work out a schedule. And I'm not suggesting that it's easy. I'm just suggesting that once you know that, then you can start making adjustments in schedules, adjustments in, you know, the reward system, adjustments in whatever it might be. And one could think of another, you know, a lot of different examples. The other thing that's great in terms of what people have in common, because I think that is the quest, is what do we have in common? And what are the meanings that we have in common in our life? Almost everybody likes pizza. And so you can solve a whole lot of problems with, you know, a few pieces of pizza.
I think that's fantastic.
That's one of Deborah's things. She says we can cure the problems of the world if we take the 5, 6, and 7-year-olds, put them in a room, fill it full of pizza, and let them tell us what to do.
It's true.
It is.
It's absolutely true. I think they have the vision, they have the energy, and they still have a sense of humor. And that's one of the things that we talk about in Renew, or what are some danger signals that when you can tell that things are kind of perhaps not going well. And because sometimes life kind of eats away at you, and you're not sure that you're not even aware that you're kind of being eaten alive by either anger or disappointment or whatever it might be. And one of the first things that can go, or sometimes it's the last thing that goes, it's very important, is a sense of humor. And when you look at kids, again, Deborah, the 5 and 6-year-olds, they laugh 60 times a day.
That's
well,
right.
What happened to us?
Pete and I laugh 60 times a day. So we're
there
good.
You go.
Oh, my God. The stuff that we do to make each other laugh is absolutely ridiculous. And it's almost necessary
yes.
in our relationship after 24 years. That's part
yeah.
of it. And if that ever went away, that would not be a good thing. That would be the end, frankly. So sense of humor is very important at our house. But I love that about Pete, because he is pretty much one of the funniest people I have ever met, and it works really well.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the baby boomers, and kind of what Pete asked you made me think about what I believe that boomers want going forward is to remain relevant
yes.
and vital. Relevant
yes.
and vital.
Yes.
And the other thing that makes us different as a cohort from our younger counterparts at work and in life is that I think we, at our age, might have a better sense of legacy and wanting to leave one than someone who is younger who thinks they have an entire lifetime to get to that, even if they maybe they've never even used the word legacy in a sentence.
I'm there. I completely agree. And the thing that's interesting, however, is that remaining relevant and vital, and another way of saying it is making a contribution, wanting to make a difference, and that gets in, you know, perhaps into the legacy zone, is that as people get older, and particularly as they get older, in, 60, 65, 70, 75, 80, older, other people stop asking them to do things. If you've been on a lot of boards, for example, not-for-profit boards or for-profit boards, some of them have age limits. I mean, 65 could be 70, could be 75, and boom, you're off the board, and nobody asks you anymore to be on a board. Or you've been through all the offices in, you know, the PTA or the fraternity or whatever it might be, and you kind of run that course. It seems to me that part of being relevant and vital is doing something different, is learning something new. I think if you stop learning, you're dead. That's just the way it is. And I don't mean just only learning a new recipe, because I think learning how to cook a new recipe is a very good idea. However, it may mean going to the community college or going to the university or going to high school adult education class and learning how to do something new with your computer, or it may learn Urdu, or it may be to learn something about economics and you've always kind of avoided that because you can't even do your checkbook, or it may be you've always been curious about, you know, Eleanor of Aquitaine or about Greek myths, or this is the time to keep on learning. And in that capacity, you're going to meet some new people, interesting people who are doing interesting things. Maybe they're members of the Sierra Club, and maybe you could help join in cleaning up the creek or join in the recycling work. Or maybe you meet somebody at a church or at a course that you're taking, and they're helping teach kindergartners how to read who don't have English as a first language. I mean, I think that one of the key things is to look for some other way to be relevant and vital, because sometimes we've used up what our first run. You know, our first act is over. This is now starting the second act, and we need to learn some new lines. We need to do some new things. And the exciting thing is having the confidence in yourself to take a risk, to show up at a course and take it, and you know, learn something.
Yeah, I think what I'm seeing is that regardless of all of the literature that's out there, regardless of all the studies that are out there, all the information that's out there about living longer, about being vital longer, having a longer life, doing many more things and much more interesting things, all of that information is out there, and everybody knows it, but we're still stuck at, we got to retire at 65. You're that's why you're off the board at 65 or whatever, because it's still that magical age. And everybody's, you know, still, even the baby boomers themselves in some cases say, you know, I'm 65, and they get the T-shirt that says retired.
I think that's a terrible word. It's a word I never use.
Oh, I know it. I agree. I am 65, and I don't feel the least bit retired. I may feel a little creaky every now and then, but I'm not retired.
The term I use, and there are books about these and using these terms, so it's not original to me, is refired and rewired. And I think that is the way I just won't even title. I don't use that word because I think, you know, the language is very interesting, and meanings of words have great, deep meaning. And in the 1950s, when people retired, they died, because people died when they were 70 or 71 or 72.
That's
and
right.
So retirement really did mean the end of, you know, kind of productive, if not actual life. Well, things are different now. I mean, if you're 80 or you're 85, in all likelihood, you're going to be alive when you're 90 or 92 or 93. So, but the words haven't changed, and the meaning, the kind of soul deep meaning, hasn't changed. And so I just think we have to use different words.
I do too. Now, let's go back to vital as a word that we need to probably spend quite a bit of time on, I think, because you have a book called The Fatigue Prescription, 4 Steps to Renewing Your Energy, Health, and Life. And I have to believe that vitality is exactly what you're talking about, is making sure that you know, the opposite of fatigue is happening, right?
That's exactly right. And the thing that's interesting, I mean, the word vital and vitality is means life. The vital force means life. And so there you have it. So to be vital means to have life, to give life, to be life-giving. It's it has the same kind of double and triple, very deep meaning as inspiration. And for example, the word in, when people breathe and they breathe in, that's inspiration, and when they breathe out, you know, that's expiration. However, what the Latin really means is in means to take in, and S-P-I-R means the spirit. And so when you're breathing in, they thought, you know, you were breathing in spirit, which actually we're breathing in oxygen. However, the word itself also, as we know, means having a new idea, having spirit. So that, the word inspiration, the word spirit and inspire all are connected with life, with breathing, and with being able to have that sparkle and spirit and new thoughts that oxygen and vitality bring to you. So they're all wonderfully tied together in our language.
It is, and I think that the more we pay attention to that wonderful inspiration that you're talking about in terms of sparkle and joy, not just creativity and breathing, you know, but sparkle and joy.
Right.
And I think that that I like the points in your book about getting to what I'm calling sparkle and joy. I don't know if you did, but
sure.
You know, it's not always easy, and sometimes you actually have to change your. You were talking about your values. You also have to give up some of your hard-won and hard-fought attitudes. You know, I've been cranky all my life, and I intend to stay that way until I die. Oh, by the way, I might have 40 years left.
Yeah, well,
you know, maybe I should not be cranky my whole rest of my life, you know.
Well, it has consequences. You see, it's interesting that there are, when you think about what we can control, it really, and again, when I'm, you know, talking with people and audiences and, you know, keynotes and things like that, I say, you know, what can you control? Well, it comes down to three things. You can control your behavior on a good day when you've gotten a good night's sleep the night before and you're feeling pretty good. You can control your aspirations, which they're, that word S-P-I-R, spirit, is in there again, what you want your spirit to be doing. And the other thing you can control is your attitude. And Henry Ford said, if you think you can, or if you think you can't, you're right.
Both ways, yeah.
The other thing is, and a book that I hope that everyone would read is by Viktor Frankl, F-R-A-N-K-L is how you spell his last name, and the book is called Man's Search for Meaning, Man's Search for Meaning, and he was a psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust, and his whole family was killed, and one of the things is he wrote about being in a death camp, and it's a very powerful book. It will change, it just changes your life when you read it, at any rate, and changes your life for the better. One of the things that he said is the last human freedom is the freedom to choose your attitude in a given set of circumstances. So the last human freedom is the freedom to choose your attitude in a given set of circumstances. Another interesting thing, actually, is he felt so strongly about what we had, the three of us had talked about. He felt very strongly about sense of humor, and he would have essentially sense of humor workshops in the death camps. He said, because if you can laugh at something, it changes everything, even if it's the most desperate of times. If you can laugh.
Yep, I have read his book, and it is life-changing, and one has to say, okay, that had to be pretty much the worst set of circumstances to live through, and yet look at what came from it, you know, for him and the sharing that he did about it. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you have to pay attention after you read the book. You really do.
It is true. It's really, it is very, that's right. It, I mean, it's very convincing. You say, oh, I get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if we were going to kind of walk through your book a little bit, if you don't mind.
Surely.
I know that you have four steps for renewing health, or, I'm sorry, energy, health, and life. And I think that's really, you know, no matter how old you are, those are steps you need to know, right? So why don't we go through those real quick?
Well, right. What I found and how this prescription, developed, it was developed over the last 15 years since I've been working with just thousands of people across the country, and would ask, how do you refresh? How do you get beyond disappointment, sometimes grief, not feeling good, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is a kind of a distillation of what I've learned from other people, and I've been grateful to them. The first step is awareness, and that's really, we've already been talking about that today, to be aware of how you're feeling, whether it's sense of humor or attitude or rut or groove. First is aware of how you are and the people around you. How, if you're at work or at synagogue or at the mosque or at the softball game, how are people treating each other? How are people acting? How are they feeling? How are you feeling? So first is awareness. The second is reflection. That is, think about it. How did it get this way? And I have literally, you may have too, I have met boomers who realize that they are in a job that they've never liked, they never thought that they were very good at, and they kind of, quote, had to do it because their parents expected it of them, or a spouse expected it of them, or they thought somebody did, or whatever. And upon reflection, they say, wait a minute, this isn't me. This isn't what I need to be doing. I was talking with an 83-year-old man the other day who has had this realization that he had been doing kind of family business things since his parents had died. He didn't like it. He felt put upon, and he said, now it's my time. He said, I'm moving on. So at any rate, reflection is, how did it get this way? Whose expectations am I living? What allies do I have if I want to make some changes? Who's around I might enlist in this? So first is awareness. Second is reflection. Third is conversation, which is what you all do and offer to others. And the thing that's wonderful about conversation, the word itself is wonderful. Con means with, as in consensus, and versus means turn. And so when you're in conversation, it means that you're willing to turn with someone because you're listening to each other. You might make a decision that, takes you 180 degrees the other direction, or maybe 1 or 2 degrees, or simply adding some wisdom to each other. That's not the same as email. It's not the same as Twitter. It's not the same as Facebook. It's not the same as LinkedIn. It is sitting with someone or two people whom you respect, sometimes as a total stranger, and talking about things that are on your mind. So there's conversation. Then after the conversation, and then that may send you back to some reflection and some awareness, et cetera, et cetera. Then you get to the stage of being able, if you decide you need to or want to, make some changes. So you get to plan and act. So the last of the four steps is plan and act. And by the time you get there and you've been aware of it, you've thought about it, you've talked about it, planning and acting get to be much more like stepping off of a curb instead of jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. Because a lot of people don't like to change. I mean, some people do, many people don't. And so the idea is to have it be a gentle process. Sometimes it has to be overnight. We know there are terrible tragedies and things happen very suddenly. And however, the idea with this is when you have the opportunity to make the changes in a thoughtful, respectful kind of a way, and it's less of a shock, easier to do.
Right. Well, I like this this prescription. I like this because it makes perfect sense, and it doesn't say that you have to do everything right away. You can start with awareness and reflection. And what I love about what you said about the meaning of conversation and the root, the with and the turn, I also am reminded that we have to take turns in a conversation. It's not a dialogue or a monologue. I mean, it's not a monologue. It is a dialogue. And sometimes just having somebody else to take turns with that you trust and you care for, and you have a conversation about something to amplify not only your problems, but maybe let them take the same time and amplify their problems, then you can actually maybe come to some consensus about how to solve both. Is that possible?
I think that's a wonderful point, is taking turns. It's bound to be benefit to both of you, or let's say there are three people. I mean, you can have a conversation with four people over a cup of coffee or something. I mean, the idea of careful and respectful listening is first a gift to whomever else is there, because it's an honor to be listened to, and it's also an honor to listen to someone who you respect. And so it adds this wonderful positivity to the situation, and the taking turns also means that you are listening carefully. So you don't interrupt and you don't rush on ahead and so forth and so on. The other thing that's interesting about it is in a conversation, you're kind of seeking wisdom, and it means to everybody in it, because let's say we're all on the same footing, we kind of have this unsaid agreement, is that we don't have to have all the answers ourselves. As you said earlier when we were having this conversation, is that, you know, sometimes you just you have to give up something because something that you've been holding on to for a long, long time just doesn't work anymore, and you just have to give it up. That can be hard, and nothing is in life as easy as that I've noticed. However, to admit that you don't have all the answers is a very healthy thing. So that's another kind of element of entering into a conversation, is it's respect, it's listening, it's gathering wisdom, and it's also saying, look here, chickadee, you don't know it all, and somebody else can have some good ideas, just as you may have some good ideas for them that they haven't thought of either.
That's right. I think that's exactly right. And I like what you called me chickadee. I know you weren't necessarily talking to me.
I was talking about me, chickadee.
I know. Well, I refer to myself as chickadee also. It's like, must be a good thing to call ourselves.
It is. I think it's a good thing.
I think it is too. Now, what I'm thinking is that what I teach about, if you will, is something that has the acronym ROC.
Mm-hmm.
And it stands for resilience, optimism, courage, and kindness. And I think that baby boomers can rock the second half of life if they figure out how to incorporate resilience, optimism, courage, and kindness pretty much in everything they do, which is why I love your four steps. And I like the idea, frankly, of rocking all four steps. So, you know, I'd like to blend those two in my thinking and say, okay, I like what I'm talking about, and I like what you're talking about, and it will fill some needs in my life personally, because I have some ruts and grooves that I need to make sure. Well, frankly, I need to make sure that some of my grooves do not become ruts. I had not thought about that yet. I think that's one of the things that I caught early on in figuring out what to talk about with you. Is like, oh my gosh, I think I've got some grooves that are just this side of ruts if I'm not careful. So,
and that's the first step in renewing. That is the awareness part. Once you are aware of that, then you can do something about it. And so it's worthwhile kind of going over the last week or the last day or the last month, or how did you feel 6 months ago. It's worth thinking back of, you know, gee, and, you know, this can happen with relationships, too, and I'm not talking about marriages, because I think marriage is an absolute commitment. It turns out, and I learned this from a friend who was talking about other people whom I didn't know, actually, in her life, And she said, you know, I came to see that when I see them, she said, I get discouraged. She said, there's something about however they're living their lives or their attitudes, or which again is as we had talked earlier, is something that you do choose. And she said, so I just decided I couldn't afford to keep on seeing them because it was kind of doing me damage, because it would take away my spirit when I saw them. So that's kind of one of the awareness things. I've also, for example, become aware that there's certain kinds of movies that I can't see because they just upset me. And I'm not going to go see those. I don't care how popular they are if they get an Academy Award. Why should I go out to do something that's going to make me feel bad? Has the groove become a rut, or is it on the edge of that? That's awareness, and that starts the whole renewal process. And you can think about it, though, with relationships, with activities. You know, if there's some committee that you're on, even if it's your last committee you're on and you're hanging on because you just want to be relevant anymore, well, if it discourages you, it's time to find something else. That's where the learning comes in. And I really love your rock list a great deal. And if I could just say one of the things, because I had also mentioned, and I'm just so glad that your K is kindness. In English, the strongest words, the words that have the most meaning to us, are actually Anglo-Saxon words. And the word kindness comes from an Anglo-Saxon word which is spelled C-Y-N-N, which was pronounced kin, which means kin, like your family. And so
family.
That's
uh-huh.
How you treat people is the way you would treat your family. And so it has just a tremendous amount of wonderful, deep meaning as well.
I'd like to kind of go back just for a split second here, Linda, about when you were talking about just recently with Deborah about your surroundings. And I firmly believe that you can control your surroundings just by making those choices that you were talking about. For instance, and get yourself in a rut versus in the groove. You can find yourself based on your surroundings and what you're doing that will be start to affect the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a couple of examples. When we're at the office back in at the house, in our little office at the house, sometimes we'll have one of the cable stations on, background noise. And without realizing it, all of a sudden we'll look up and we'll go, what in the world are they
mm-hmm.
talking about? That is the most depressing thing I've ever heard. What are they saying? You know, mm-hmm. And it's like, you got to turn that stuff off. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you just got to get rid of that stuff because it's doing nothing except making you agitated, listening to thinking and thinking how idiotic some of these people really are and what they're trying to perpetrate. So you just have to turn it off, and you have to get yourself out of that rut, because that can become a rut in and of itself. And the other thing is, in business, you're working with all kinds of different people, and there are some clients that you have that are just a royal pain in the patoot. Nothing you're going to do is ever going to 100% satisfy them. They're going to always have some kind of a complaint. They may even be paying you good money. But at some point, you may just have to fire that client so you get yourself out of that rut. And I thought I'd just throw that out there for your comment.
I think that's absolutely, absolutely true. One about your environment, and it really, hearing is a very important part of your senses, of course. If anything, you can think about, you know, some sort of wonderful Bach or Beethoven or something, you know, that has some order to it and not just yammer, yammer, yammer. The other thing about an environment is very interesting is clutter. And we all tend to accumulate. Well, not everybody accumulates it. However, it turns out that clutter can be very discouraging. You can't find things. You spend most of your time looking for things. And you look around, and you don't look like how it looks. Well, that is also something that you can manage and get help with. And actually, there's some of that in the book, too, because on the one hand, I was in an office of a colleague yesterday. I said, a clean desk is a sign of a sick mind. So he had a very, very well mind, I'll tell you. I couldn't even find a place to sit down. But at any rate, and then in terms of firing, you know, it's just like I was mentioning to about my friend who essentially fired the people who discouraged her. She just didn't want to see them anymore. And there's some things that money is not worth, and money is not worth getting eaten to the soul by somebody who is a help-rejecting complainer or someone who you cannot ever please. And they're, you know, yeah, you just have to think, those are barnacles on the ship of my life, and I'm going to scrape them off so I can move ahead.
What I call it is that situation or that person or that circumstance doesn't fit my profile anymore.
I just
like that. You know, I don't mind scraping barnacles because it doesn't fit my profile. And the other thing,
I don't want to be known that way. You know, the other thing that I wanted to say, and you can interrupt me, certainly, but part of what we're talking about for this time, which is so enjoyable, is a very basic principle, and I think that this may be partly a boomer matter, too, is that a lot of us have been taught to sacrifice until we die. That is, that's the job, you know, the person in the family who works for money is supposed to work for money all the time. That's their job, and they stay in the saddle, you know, not very many holidays, not very many, you know, vacations, you know, long, 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 long hours. And it's the same with parents, whoever is taking care of the children or taking care of their parents, too, because it's still the sandwich generation. You to just take care of people, take care of them. Part of the point of all this is that you, as an individual, are so important that you must take care of yourself. And, excuse me, that it's not selfish to take care of yourself. It is self-preservation so you can do what you want to do and what you need to do. It is not selfish to take care of yourself. It is self-preservation so you can do what you want to do.
In the airline talk, the flight attendant says, put your mask on first.
And that's exactly right. And that's the point is because you want to do what you have to do. If you're trying to save the child next to you or the person next to you, exactly right. And so whatever we're doing, it's got to be all right to take some time for ourselves, to get a massage, to go for a walk, to take a do a round of golf, get somebody to provide care for whomever they need. You need to get care provided or exchange with someone else so that you can, if money is a problem, which it's a money is a problem for everything, you can still sometimes barter services. And again, I don't mean to say that anything simple. I just mean to say it's not going to do anybody any good if you grind yourself to death.
That's right.
Well, we all have to renew, absolutely. And even if you think you've got all of your ducks in a row, you probably could still take a little time and, you know, go through your awareness, reflection, conversation, plan, and act phases, steps, and say, you know what? I can renew something. Like I can learn Japanese. You know, I've actually had learned Japanese as one of my to-do lists for about 25 years, and I think I'm going to have to move it up a little bit on my to-do list because I would like to learn Japanese. I don't know why. I just think it would be I think it would be difficult. I think that would be a challenge, and you know, I just think we should challenge ourselves. So
I think you'd love it, and it would probably make you want to go and visit, and it's a great place to visit. We
exactly.
Just got back.
Yeah.
Oh,
really.
Wonderful. Okay,
yeah.
Well, good.
Do it. You know, and the other thing is, and again, as a physician, I just would want to say, make sure you get your flu shot every year. Make sure if you're over 60, you get your shingles shot. Make sure that you get the tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis shot, you know, because you don't want to give this disease, any of these diseases, to your grandkids because the grandkids are more likely to die than you are. I mean, you know, and it's about exercise. It's about eating well. It's about knowing that the Food and Drug Administration is not allowed to test supplements and additives because of the law that doesn't allow them to test that. So you have to know that, for example, if you're on Coumadin, which is a lot of people are on it to make sure they don't get blood clots. But the things like garlic and ginseng and ginger and ginkgo all interact with Coumadin to make you more likely to bleed. So there are things you do have to pay attention to your health, and there are wonderful websites that the government has, NIH, CDC.gov, and you can look up anything and get good advice. So, again, as a physician, I want to make sure that we also, because our body has to be okay, because if our body isn't okay, nothing much is okay either.
The rest of it can go to hell in a handbasket.
Or heaven.
Or wherever. Right. My trouble is it's going to be hell getting there.
Well, there's that.
Well, Linda, I want to thank you for spending this time with us today. And before we say goodbye, I'd like you to give us whatever information you want for ourselves and for our listeners, how they can get hold of you. Tell them about your Renew program, how can they get enrolled, and where they can buy your book and so on. So here's your time to just give your shameless self-commercial.
Well, thank you. It really is meant because we found that the Renew in the book helps people feel better and do better, and so that's the goal. The website is www.renewnow.org. That's all one word, renewnow.org, O-R-G, which is a website. The book has its own website, too, which is www.thefatigueprescription, all one word, .com. And you can buy the book any place, your independent bookseller, your chains, Amazon, it's on Kindle, so forth and so on. And on the website, renewnow.org, there are ways to get in touch with us and find out what we're doing next and where we're going to be. And I think that what we do is we have a very profound, moving, and fun time together. And so that's what I look forward to meeting you, too. And I thank you very much for a great conversation.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I think you're doing wonderful things with your book and helping a lot of people out. And after all, that's probably what we should be doing in life is helping people out, and we're glad to know you for doing it.
It was a pleasure talking with you, Linda. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Well, we all want to be relevant and vital, and this is part of it, and so are you.
Thank you again.
Take care. Have a great day.
Righto. Bye-bye.
And we'd like to thank all our listeners for joining us today on the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring you good conversation, bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you information and conversation with Dr. Linda Clever, author of the book, The Fatigue Prescription. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock. Pacific time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. We also print our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks, and you can subscribe to that absolutely free at boomerandthebabe.com. Make sure that you make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Join us for new and more good programming as the week goes on, and we hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining us.
To the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as PeteFeeders47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.